I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Ty Gibbons. She is the founder and CEO of the CX Collective. She partners with ambitious brands to build customer experience programs that don't just keep up, they actually lead. Over her career, Ty has transformed a number of support operations at every stage, from scrappy startups to their first help desk to Fortune 500s, thinking how they serve millions of customers. Ty, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
I was looking forward to this interview because I think you cover an area that most businesses don't think about.
Right.
You know, it's CX Collective. And if I'm right, that stands for CX stands for customer experience.
Yes.
Okay. In a nutshell, what is that?
Yeah. So think of customer experience as every touch point that your customer has with your business or your company. A lot of times we focus on marketing, which is part of the customer experience, sales, which is part of the customer experience. Service is usually where most people see customer experience because they see it as an afterthought or reactive. But in reality, customer experience is proactive service, if you will, getting ahead of what marketing is doing so that what goes out is what the customer needs or intends for it to be, so that you can cut down on questions later.
Let me give an example from this morning and tell me if this is some of what you're thinking about customer experience. So I told you in the green room, we just moved. So my wife and I just moved into a new house.
Yeah.
Our coffee maker is who knows where. It's somewhere in one of these many boxes stacked up to our ears.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife in particular likes coffee in the morning. So this morning I wake up before I pull out my Starbucks app. And I order one of those little travelers, which is like a little tote or a carafe of coffee that you can bring home. And it tells me that my coffee will be ready in 6 to 9 minutes. I'm thinking, mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. That's about how long it takes me to get to Starbucks.
Yep.
A couple things to wrap up. And I jumped in my car. I drove over to Starbucks and it was 6:13 a.m.
Okay.
And I walked up to the counter and they're like, "Did you call something in?" I said, "Yeah, I called in a traveler." "Oh, well, that takes 30 minutes. I take my phone and hold it up saying, "Expect it to be ready at 6:09.
Yeah.
I show it to her. I said, "Well, it says it should be ready now." She's like, "Oh, well, I wouldn't believe that. This is Starbucks."
Yeah, problem.
And I say, "Well, can I have some coffee while I wait for my coffee?" She's like, "Yeah, just meet me over at the register. We'll sell you some coffee."
Sell you?
Yeah.
Sorry. What?
So that was my customer experience at Starbucks this morning.
Yeah.
And
that's not ideal. So, okay. So let me tell you that in that scenario, the opportunities that I see, one, it's a small thing, which is it's common sense, right? If someone orders the traveler coffee, then instead of it defaulting to the 6 to 9 normal prep, you know, time for a cup of coffee or a latte, you automatically update it to 30 minutes. That's opportunity one. And I guarantee you, you're nice. Now, I've got some friends of mine who I laugh and believe, I do this work, but they are the customer service police. And I laugh because I'm like, they would have called corporate and raised all kinds of hell. So they got lucky. So that's one. The other opportunity is to one, show empathy for the mistake that Starbucks made. So, because at the end of the day, putting 6 to 9 minutes is their mistake. That's not yours. You showed up, you gave them ample time, you followed their protocol. It's not on you. And then when you say, "Can I get a cup of coffee to wait?" you should not have had to say that. It should have been, "Can I get you a cup of coffee while you wait?" Because I don't know if you've ever heard of Net Promoter, but Net Promoter is the it's a wacky formula that basically says either people are promoting you, indifferent, or they're detracting. And it's typically rated from 1 to 10, and it is based on a trusted resource. So anyone listening to your podcast likely trusts your voice. That's why they listen to you. You've just given them an experience that you had at Starbucks, an honest account. And that will make someone say, "Well, the next time I need to order a traveler pack, I'm not going to go to Starbucks," right? Simply off of your experience. So in this case, you would be a detractor, not because you're trying to take anything away from him, from them. That's just what happened. And so part of the customer experience is about creating promoters and getting ahead of those little moments and doing the little tweaks that turn customers into promoters. So I'll venture to say, going back to when I used to answer phones, I was not the best rep. And part of the disconnect is that I didn't understand that I was the brand. I still saw myself as a person who worked at this company. So when, and this was like, I used to work for Office Depot at this time. So I remember my last day on the phones before I went into another role, a customer told me to go home and start all over again. And he told me to do that because he had called about pins. And I was so frustrated. One, I hated being on the phones. But two, I was so frustrated with this question about pins because I'm thinking in my mind, I didn't pack the order because no one taught me that I was Office Depot. It didn't matter who packed the order, I was Office Depot. So in this instance, you didn't say Maggie at Starbucks. You just said, "I went to Starbucks and this happened." She is the brand. Where is her manager? That's the question.
Yeah. Well, let me give you an opposite experience.
Okay.
So this happened years ago. I grew up in Maryland, and my wife and I flew up to DC for Thanksgiving. And it was the Saturday before Thanksgiving, and we decided to spend a night in the city before going out to my brother's place in Harper's Ferry.
Okay.
And we land on the Saturday night before Thanksgiving. We had gotten a really good rate at a hotel room like 2 blocks north of the White House. And it was between the White House and K Street. And so I pull out my Yelp app and I start looking for restaurants. They're all closed.
Wow.
Every one of them's closed. And there turns out there's a reason. K Street is where all the lobbyists hang out.
Okay.
And so the Saturday before Thanksgiving, there were no Palms degrees. So there was no need for
Yeah.
any of the restaurants to be open because all the clients, all the customers were lobbyists or they were trying to do business with somebody in DC.
Yeah.
I found one restaurant and it was a Mediterranean restaurant. It had two little dollar signs, which was what we were looking for. We were tired. We were looking for something simple. The next day we were going to a very nice restaurant in Georgetown that was going to be our nice meal in the city. And so we bebop over to this restaurant. We're wearing jeans and, jeans and t-shirt type attire, except it was a little bit colder, so with a coat or something. And we walk in this restaurant, we're expecting just kind of a simple joint. And I get to the hostess station and I realize that I'm standing in a 5-star restaurant.
Oh boy.
And just to put it in perspective, like in the 2 months leading up to my wife and I walking in there, Hillary Clinton had had dinner there. The
Oh my
president of
goodness.
Mexico had had dinner there. And we're there in jeans and t-shirts.
Oh wow.
And they say, "Oh, we're going to find you a very romantic table." And they did, but it wasn't by the kitchen, but it
Okay.
also wasn't in main view. And it was a nice table.
Yeah.
And my wife looks at the menu and she's like, flipping out. And I said, "Look, we're here. Enjoy it. Just, we're going to
Yeah.
have a good meal." And we eat the meal and they treat us wonderfully. And we're at the end of our meal, and the waiter shows up with a complimentary dessert. Just this amazing, I mean, the dessert was like a meal by itself. It was ginormous.
Yeah.
And the name of the restaurant was Kalari. And You can imagine, I've told that story so many times, and I've told people if you're ever in DC around K Street, you should eat at Kalari because they treated us nicer than we deserved based on how we were dressed. And they didn't shame us for showing up in their restaurant in jeans. And DC is a very formal city. You don't show up at nice restaurants in jeans.
I think that's amazing. I mean, my grandfather's passed on. May he, my one of my favorite people, he passed away not too long ago. And for his, I believe it was his 92nd birthday, we were taking him to dinner, and the restaurant that we were going to is one that we had frequented a lot. But it is, you know, I use air quote fingers when I call it upscale. But like, I would go there sometimes just if I'm out shopping, and I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna go have lunch, me and my mom or whatever. So anyway, I get there before the rest of my family. I'm inside, I'm waiting for my family to arrive. We have a reservation. My mom calls me and says, they won't let us in. What do you mean they won't let you in? Your sister has on sweatpants. Now she has on designer high-end sweatpants. So it was like a whole athleisure look, but they won't let her in. And I have not been back to that restaurant. And I even talked to the manager about it. And I'm like, look, we come here all the time. It's my grandfather's 92nd birthday. I'm sorry, we have a very strict dress code. What would have been nice is to say, you know what, we do have a dress code. I see that you've come here pretty frequently. Next time, just so you know, this is how it is, but let me get you guys seated. That restaurant is Eddie V's. I used to love the food, but I'll never go back. So I am like,
Eddie
kudos.
V, see, what was it? Freshwater Grill?
Yes, there's one down in Manhattan Beach. And I kid you not, like, ever since they opened, we used to love the patio. We'd go, they had these great little lobster tacos, just like, you know, cute place, fun, nice ambiance of a whole business centers there, everything. And it was so unfortunate to, you know, especially when I gave, like, it's my granddad's birthday. He's 92. That was his last birthday.
Oh my.
Right? And that we ended up going down to Fleming's and had a fine time, but it was disheartening. And so there are, like, you know, when we talk about situations like this, there are different policies and things that are put into place that are not always put into place with the forethought of how it could affect, you know, the 20% of your, you know, your 80% of the time is going to be fine. And then there's that 20%. And some people lack the discernment on when to flex on that.
Right. So you know, we talked about Starbucks, we talked about Kalari Restaurant, we talked about Eddie V's. I mean, those are obvious choices for customer experience. Is this just something for the service industry?
I don't think so, because every company has customers. Like, literally every company has a customer. I mean, even you as a podcast host, your listeners are technically your customers. We all have an opportunity to build an experience for people who engage with us in a way that makes sense for them. Otherwise, why would they continue to come back?
Right.
SaaS companies, you know, it doesn't matter what your product is, there's an audience out there who's going to be consuming that product, whether you sell it or you gift it or whatever that is. You have to have something that keeps them coming back to you. And the customer experience is a good way to do that, like listening to what they say or even what they don't say, right? Just analyzing behaviors, really paying attention to what your customer or your listeners expect of you and delivering that.
No, I think so. It's, and I would say especially so for, you know, if you have a high ticket service. If you have a high ticket service, it should be easy to bake in the margin to deliver, you know, a little something extra in the experience.
And you know, I mean, the example that you gave of the restaurant in DC, my first inclination was that there is a very clear understanding that they have to deliver a certain experience for their customer because of who their customers are. And, you know, some of the wealthiest people and the most important people walk around in jeans and t-shirts. You never know who you're serving or who you're talking to or who you're dealing with. So it is to their benefit to treat everyone with the utmost respect because you don't know who that person is. And especially in high-end environments, I think that in high-end environments, the person who is dressed down the most is probably the most important person in the room.
It's funny you mentioned that. So here's another one of my stories from LA.
Okay.
So I used to travel to Asia a lot, and on my way back, I'd usually my first stop in the US was often LA,
Okay.
and I would go to the Admirals Club and take a shower to get ready for my next flight. And I come out of the shower and I go up to the bar in the Admirals Club to get like a Diet Coke or something. And I look, and there's this scrawny little short dude standing next to me, literally like 2 feet away. He's got tattoos up and down his arms. His wallet is on a chain. And I just kind of look at him. I'm not proud of this, but I kind of look at him. I'm like, who let him in? And I go sit down and I hear somebody whispering and I hear psh, 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 Tommy Lee.
Exactly.
Is that Tommy Lee? And they're like, yeah. I'm like,
Yeah.
oh. And then I look at, for those that don't know, the drummer for what was his band? Not Poison. Was it Poison or
No, I mostly remember him from Pamela, from his wife. I
yeah.
don't remember. I don't remember the band.
Yeah, I forgot the name of but yeah, if you're into heavy metal, it was like one of the big heavy metal, hard rock bands, and I'm just drawing a blank what it was. But yeah, he was married to Pamela Anderson for a while. And when I looked over, I saw this ginormous dude about 10 feet away. I'm like, oh, that's who I would have met if I'd made some move towards this
Right.
guy.
His bodyguard.
Yeah. But no, I think that's, and when I moved to Austin, that was one of the first things that people told me. They said there's an area called Oak Hill, which is somewhat near where I used to live. And they said, if you're at a restaurant in Oak Hill and you see somebody that looks like they're on the edge of homelessness, they're probably a multimillionaire. And that's just kind of the way it was. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the point you're making is you should treat everybody exceptionally, regardless of how they look, because you never know who you're dealing with.
100%. Just don't judge. You literally never know.
Yeah.
Never know. And like in LA, that's a thing because another high-end restaurant that I like is Mastro's. I love Mastro's. And so my favorite thing about Mastro's is you come as you are. No one is gonna say anything to you about what you're wearing, how you're dressed. There are people who get dressed up very nicely to go to Mastro's. And then there are some people who just happen to roll through, but you don't get treated any differently, regardless of what you're wearing. And that's the way that it should be, because you just never know who's who.
Right. There's a business that I would love to meet with the CEO just to figure out how he's surviving. In the era of Amazon, Barnes and Noble still seems to be a viable business. And I'd love to know what it is that they've done, but they obviously have done something in the customer experience to get people, instead of ordering from Amazon, to come in and buy books from them.
I can't speak for everybody. I love books. I love the smell of books. I love to hold a book. I love the ambiance of Barnes and Noble. I like to take my laptop there and sit in the little cafe bar and do my work. There's something very nostalgic about being there, so much so that I was like, if I had free time, because I used to work for Walden Books. I'll get into that in a second. But when I would say if I had free time, I would actually go and work at a bookstore just to be in that atmosphere. It just smells lovely. It's so nice in there. And when I was a teenager, I was about 18, I worked at Walden Books. And it was in the small downtown LA, super small mall. And tell you a funny story. So my boss, her name was Leslie. And we're still in touch to this day, 25 years later. I ran into her at a CVS and I got so excited. But anyway, I was just wanted to hug her. She's the sweetest lady in the world. And while I was working there, we used to sell these preferred readers cards. Barnes and Noble has something very similar. So like basically you pay a certain fee for the card and then it gets you discounts the rest of the year. So ours was $10. You spend $250 in 1 year, you get a $5 certificate for every $250 you spend. So for me, once I understood that, my coworker Kurt, I would listen to him talk to people about it. And he had this way of saying, like, if you, oh, your total today is, you know, 30 some odd dollars. So today the car will cost you seven, right? And what I would find listening to him, people were not like biting at that, but I always found that if it was a over $50 spend, they would do it. So I would start talking to people. I would ask them if they had one, if the purchase was under $50. If they didn't, no problem. When it was over 50, I, you know, it's only $5 today because it applies. And it was a no-brainer. So I was like cleaning up on selling these preferred readers cards. I didn't get anything for it though. That's the funny part. Like there was an incentive, or it was just in my mind, I was like, it's a no-brainer for you. I'm helping you. You're gonna get 10% off on all your purchases and blah, blah, blah. Anywho, apparently loss prevention thought I was working some sort of magic and they didn't like it because it's like, how is this person selling so many of these cards? And they were coming out to interview me. And in that, my boss, I remember she took me to Coffee Bean. At the time, she didn't tell me what it was about. She's like, look, like, and it was my first time buying coffee too. So like my first like $5 latte. I remember this very vividly. Anyway, we go there and she's like, you know, there's a job fair in the building. Like, would you want to go? Whose boss tells them to go to a job fair? But she said to me, you have way too much potential to stay here selling books. Why don't we just go see? Okay. So we go to the job fair and they do on the spot interviews, and I get selected to go and talk to Office Depot to join the call centers that they're building in the LA area. There were, you know, six total across the US, but they were building one and two in LA. But anyway, I go there, I get hired, I tell her I got the job, and she's like, oh, I'm so glad. Then she tells me why she suggested it. And she's like, because I know you wouldn't do anything. I know that's not your way, and I want to see you be successful. And you know, when you have people who see things like that in you, like when I saw her, let me a little emotional, because when I saw her, I was like you're responsible for like who I've become. Because if my loyalty, the way that my loyalty is set up, I would have stayed at Walden Books for a long time. Like my goal was to be a key holder. That was all I was seeing at the time. And so if she hadn't said to me, like, let's go do this thing, I'm like, who would I have become? I owe her so much.
Well, let me ask this. After she did that, how many people did you send her way that were looking for jobs?
Well, I didn't really have anybody to send her away because transparently, I was making $6 an hour there.
Oh,
And, you know, at Office Depot, I was making $10 an hour. So, you know, I didn't really have anybody to send her away, but she had a very special and still has a special place in my heart. And so we ended up, of course, we lost touch for a period of time, but it's like now I'll never lose touch with her again. You know?
yeah, and where I was going with that was I think there's kind of circling around to the customer experience. I would say it's something even bigger. It's just the experience everybody has with touching your business that you want to create an experience where people not only would willingly give you an endorsement, but would actively give you an endorsement.
Because it's free promotion from a trusted resource. So someone who you've built a rapport with saying you should try this thing, or you know, this was great for me. It's more, that's a no-brainer. They may or may not even look for deals or entry rates or anything like that. Someone I know and trust said that I should try this thing. I'm gonna try this thing, you know? And I think that if there's a job to be done around quantifying what that looks like from, profitability standpoint. And there are some studies out there, but I guarantee you that Net Promoter is probably one of the strongest ways to actually retain new customers, right? Kind of like having an almost like an affiliate program there. It depends on who the affiliate is, but like some relationships with affiliates will, that affiliate will be the person who kind of like follows you through the journey, or they get a percentage of your fee or whatever that is, as long as you're a customer. So if you're ever thinking about leaving, and then suddenly the person who engaged with you initially is like, well, what's going on? Because you've already built a rapport with them. It's likely that they're getting, a little bit of a kickback on the end, but at the same time, you have a relationship with them and you're likely to tell them the truth about what's happening. And ideally, they should be sharing that with the company, like, well, these were the opportunities and this is why this person may be leaving. And if you lose them, you lose them, but then there's opportunities to do better in the future.
So as we're wrapping up, for a company that's heard this, I mean, so I believe very much in what you're doing, customer experience. And I think we need more people like you out there. But there are probably some folks that are saying, I'm not in a, hospitality business. Customer service doesn't matter. What are like three or five steps? What would you recommend for somebody listening to do kind of a self-assessment or kind of a self-evaluation of, hey, is there room for me to improve in my customer experience?
Well, one way to do it is simply to ask your customers, one, like, would you recommend this service product, this business to someone that you know and love, a friend or a family member? You're looking for all yeses. You can also do some sort of like post-engagement survey, or depending on how often you guys engage, maybe after you have conversations. You can also do interviews. There used to be, oh God, I'm aging myself, these follow me homes, that's what they would call it, where you would actually go into the home of your client or go to their business or whatever that is to hear directly what's happening. And then you can also just look at what they're asking you for, the and quantify that. And I think that's one of the things where people say, oh, I don't need that. There's so much in quantifying the types of requests that you get that tells you exactly what most of your customers are feeling, even though you might feel like you're seeing it one-on-one. Once you look at it, you're like, oh my gosh, 20% of our customers are saying that, I don't know, whenever they reset their password, it's going to spam. Like, can we fix that? Because if you can fix that little thing, which is just to make sure that that message doesn't go to spam, then what happens is you've reduced, getting too technical, but your cost per contact. You don't have to have a person engaging with them on that. They could be engaging with helping them to grow, their interaction with your brand, not handle problems. So I would say find ways to get information from them, quantify that information, and then take action on the most impactful things and continuously chip away. Because I don't think there's ever going to be a time where we're not solving for customers, but having a listening mechanism and an action plan is important.
And as you were going through that, I thought of an example this morning, not with a customer. So I'm in a networking group. I actually am president of a chapter of a networking group,
Nice.
and we have a leadership meeting immediately before our regular meeting, and everything's done on Zoom. And one of my officers was in the wrong Zoom waiting room, and I was like, "Where is she?" And she texted me. She's like, "I'm in the waiting room." And I had the same thing happen the week before with another one of my officers. And so when she came in, I just said, "Hey, you know what? This happened to Kyle last week. Can you tell me what you did that put you in the wrong waiting room?" And she said, "Oh, it was the meeting link for the leadership meeting as opposed to the regular meeting." And I realized it was a mistake I made. I owned the mistake and said, "You know what? I need to fix that." But it's when, and I would say that that's an internal customer, but it's all about improving the experience instead of saying, "Well, you did this wrong. Let me stand by while I shame you and tell you all the things you did wrong. Your coffee takes 30 minutes." Instead, she should have said, "Wow, when were you expecting the coffee?" and then figure out what broke.
Exactly. Inquiry versus advocacy.
And once I figured out what happened, I was like, "Well, I can fix that." And it's not only can I fix that, but it's mine to fix anyway.
And you will reduce efforts in the future just by making that one little fix, because she may not have been the only person that would be impacted by that moving forward. You just saved yourself some time.
Yeah. Well, Ty, this has been really interesting. I love what you do. I think people should invest in customer experience. How can they reach you?
So our website is cxcollective.com. And if you add a forward slash and tie at the end, so cxcollective.com/tie, I kind of just give you like an overview of anything that you could possibly want to know. Or if you, even if you just set up 15 minutes to say hello, that's cool too. It's no problem.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on Layers and Legacies.
All right. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.